episode 221. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
Graham thickens in his car up north near a Wi-Fi hotspot.
Yeah, and that music reminds me, I don't know why, of Mavericks, but that's another topic.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And Phil Wilson.
Hello.
How you doing?
Just great. I was wondering how long it would take Graham to mention
to
the
bring
word
in
Mavericks,
surf
to bring up Mavericks and surfing. It's just, I was watching WWDC and I thought, oh shit. Yeah.
Here we go. I had people telling me, oh, guess what they're naming the next OS X, you know? So I heard about it without even watching the live stream or watching the tweet stream.
Oh, how funny.
You had to be giddy.
We'll talk about that in the WWDC part because a lot happened and it'd be interesting to hear your take on it. I don't know if have all three of you guys seen the keynote.
Most of it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
I kind of.
There was a 10-minute cut that The Verge did, which I'll get the link to and stick it in the notes. But it was actually pretty good.
Good.
And it saves you a ton of time because that was like a 2-hour keynote.
It was.
And I'm glad Tim Cook's doing what he's doing, but boy, he didn't hold my interest like Steve did.
No, all I can say is that unless Apple releases a holodeck or a replicator, nobody cares, right?
That's right.
It's got to be just some amazing technology of some
Star Trek or, you know, it ain't going to get any
as soon as he transports onto the stage, then we're fat city there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right.
Well, I love how Tim, I think it's mainly you, Tim, that collates the Minnesota stories because you found several.
Yeah.
But,
we should probably define a little bit here for our listener that, how a lot of this works. Cause we're in obviously in four different places. We work off a shared Google Doc of our show notes, which ultimately becomes the show notes on the site. I don't think we've ever explained that. And Tim has done a yeoman's job in the last year of preparing these notes for us, and we all kind of contribute to them. But the bulk of it is done by Tim. So when we sometimes reference the show notes, I noticed this in listening back to stories. We come to reference the show notes that I don't think we've ever explained. We actually have.
Oh yeah.
A shared document that we work off. So we're at least all talking about the same thing. And, for example, today, Graham already off script has talked about Mavericks, which really isn't scheduled for discussion until farther down in our script.
Hey, Wilson, down, that's why they call it a conversation.
That's right.
Yeah, you've just destroyed secret to the show.
That's right. But you see, we have to break the third wall or the fourth wall because we have to explain this because all of it, the natural progression would have been guys to talk about Mavericks. But no, Steve insisted on going back to script to start at the top of the stories as they're listed.
He's trying to keep us on track.
Yeah, well, that's you. That's the kind of guy I am. Yeah. So enough of that. It's just this little peek behind the scenes here at Minivate. And don't you feel gifted and lucky because
there
of that?
You go.
That was a little too much information.
Thank you so much.
And I'm sure everyone listening to this will be stunned and amazed that there's a collaborative online document of some kind that we can all use.
Right. So just to summarize, I prepare the notes and then you guys show up. And then we start talking about the notes.
That's pretty much what it's become.
That's pretty much what it's become. Yep. And well, everything else is magic.
Oh, we do add. We do add to them. Now, come on now.
Yeah. We do add.
No, I know. I'm just trying to be
facetious. There have been those times that you haven't been able to step up because of something. And we've covered. The show's not as good, but we have done it.
I guess that's
good. Show being good is a relative term.
Hey, speak for yourself. All right, let's get back on track. So our first big Minnesota story is one where Microsoft has to be really nervous about the Surface because they're going to lose a lot of sales. Oh, have they had any sales? Anyway, 3M introduced...
Try to figure out this big multi-touch display that 3M is rolling out. It's like, okay, what the hell do you use this thing for other than gaming that hasn't been developed yet?
Well digital signage.
Yeah, and
in retail.
And in the document, article, they do talk about some use cases. You know, so for example, imagine sitting with a whole family as you build your own car at a dealership and everyone can choose their own things that they want.
Who the hell is going to do that?
It's like, come on, really? Yeah.
Yeah. Not the Wilsons. That's yeah.
Come on, kids. Let's go design a car.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Little Johnny, you want your seat to be in red? Yeah. No, it's like,
what kind
come
of
on.
A cup holder would you like?
Yeah.
I want my cup holder to be square.
These are going to be in the waiting rooms of all the Applebee's and Chili's and Red Robins all across the country.
Uh huh.
To distract the kids.
Uh huh.
Oh, yeah.
So well, it's kind of like a giant. Yeah. It's sort of like a giant Pac-Man screen. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah.
Why don't
they make them small? I don't know.
I don't know why they have to
like compete and make iPad screens with these.
Well, you know, I could see having it embedded in a conference table. And so if you're selling something elaborate or you want to show things or you want to demonstrate things or you want, you know, the prospect or the customer to be able to move things around, you know, I can absolutely see application for it. What will matter is who designs what. But boy, $6,500. I mean, when I think digital signage, we just went into a local Mexican restaurant here, and they have 3 Samsung HD displays. And I was talking to the woman who owns it, and she said, "Yeah, we picked all 3 of them up at Costco for like $800, mm-hmm. you know, a piece." So. $6,500 is going to be tough.
And you're probably the only one that's ever asked her. So where'd you get these screens?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like a Dos Equis and hey, where'd you get these screens?
Tell me your story.
Well, people like that you're interested in their business. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know where I've seen these large screens utilized is or heard about it is with museums.
Yeah,
there was a presentation at the Blur conference that I attend, which is about the human computer interface. And there's some pretty amazing stuff that museums have done for displays. But again, it's not a huge market. And, you know, some museums can't spend the money, I'm sure, to put these elaborate systems in place. But there are some niche markets, and 3M appears to be going after some of those. Well, retail could be considered more than a niche, I guess, but it's only going to be certain kinds of retailers, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
is Applebee's going to buy one of these for every one of their stores? I don't know.
I was just making that up. I don't know. Yeah. They'd probably get a volume deal if they...
are smaller ones than the big new one they announced. I mean, they have... smaller versions of these that maybe aren't that pricey. And
I think you're all missing the big picture. The big question is it niche or niche? That's the big question that we have.
The big question is a tweet that I saw about this that said, "Oh, touch me?" ? And then just had a link.
Yeah.
And it's a guy I know fairly well. So I thought I knew he wasn't spamming or hoping he wasn't. So I clicked it. And it went to this article on the 3M multi-touch. So, touch me.
Link bait.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I thought it was, but
Twitter
he was,
link bait.
You know, he was questioning it.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
He was the first one to touch on the touch me.
True.
I do that once in a while on Twitter where I tease somebody to make them click, and I always feel guilty about it, you know, like...
I thought you were going to say, touch me.
Yep. No, I've never done that.
Okay.
I try to keep the sexual innuendo out of my tweets.
Yeah, so do I. All right. So the second big story is, what?
I was going to do a smooth segue. And now
the second one on the list is,
come on.
You're filled with finesse.
It happened. You know, we kind of make it happen, but no, you've blown it now. So.
Well, so Honeywell introduces city-controlled thermostat system for homes. So now this, to me, is the evil part of the Internet of Things.
What do you mean it's the evil part?
Well,
it's the whole part of the Internet.
They give you a break on your bill if you do it.
Yeah, but here's the thing.
Steve. If you don't like it, don't do it.
In the past, they would just do a brownout and destroy the electronics in your house. Now they want to reach really in. Like so much now they want to reach in and actually fiddle with your thermostat.
That's right. I'm kidding. They're going to put a microphone in the thermostat so they can go back to the NSA.
And a camera, exactly.
Yeah.
they're already doing this right now.
He's making these phone calls, and he's doing it while he's cold.
They're already doing this anyway. Steve, they're doing this anyway. This just happens to be on the outside of your house. You know, there's the off-peak usage monitor that's already running on your house, and that's already going back to the NSA, so they know how much heat you're using.
I was being facetious, but...
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Well, at least Graham will probably hack it and then turn my heat way up. Well, I'm sitting here sweating and thinking, what the hell's going on?
What's going on? Who's watching me?
So basically it's Nest controlled by the power company.
By the man.
Yeah, by the man.
Yeah.
By the man. The man's keeping me down.
South City, Nebraska is the first community, huh?
Well, it's a good idea because the if you look at the graphs of expected global energy use, you know, and how it's accelerating because everybody's plugging stuff in, it's going to be a big deal.
South Sioux City, Nebraska, Graham. They chose that because they really don't have anything to live for there anyway. So.
Either that or Warren Buffett is behind this. I don't know, gosh. But I guess that's Omaha.
That's Omaha, but that's South Sioux City is, it's Nebraska. But anyway, so you guys saw that now that I found this interesting that Best Buy has partnered with to do another store within a store with Windows, right? With Microsoft.
Yeah.
So, but isn't that just the computer department? Isn't that what that is?
No, it's little boutiques.
Yeah, but it's the same sort of.
It's the same strategy that JCPenney's trying.
Yeah, you had your Apple store within a store.
And now the Samsung ones are being built out as we speak. Yeah,
the Samsung store. You know, but you had Apple. That was the other main OS. So the rest of the store was already the Microsoft store.
Yeah, but you know what it is they're pulling it all together in one place instead of making you go around and search through the store for Windows related stuff, I guess. So whoopee ding ding, you know, they're moving it into one location.
I was at the Apple store in the Mall of America this last week. My son took his gifts from everybody that came and visited him at graduation and had enough money to go buy himself a MacBook Pro. So we went to Mall of America and we were sitting in there. He was syncing up his phone or something. And he even commented looking across the hall at the Microsoft store going, "Wow, it sure is quiet over there."
Yeah, no kidding.
And there's this endless stream of people coming into the Apple store, which always amazes me. I mean, here it was a Tuesday afternoon, and people are just streaming into this store.
Yeah.
When you think of what Microsoft pays for rent at the Mall of America per customer, it's got a really high number.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
But again, yeah, I think that this is probably less about a Windows store within Best Buy as what Tim talked about, this boutiquing of retailers.
Yeah, they're trying to make it. It's really a showroom for all the manufacturers. So they're just charging them like trade show fees to have their own store within a store. So it's another way that Best Buy can make money without depending on customers actually buying stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's really kind of like it's having end cap space on steroids. I mean, because there's always been this, you know, huge competition by manufacturers to get their items on an end cap. This is kind of like end cap on steroids.
Yep.
So it is. I'm sure it's definitely going to make a lot of money for the folks at Best Buy.
I don't think it's going to sell Windows 8 anymore, though.
No, I don't think that either.
Yeah. So.
Well, they're training the Best Buy people. Microsoft is spending a lot of time and effort on training, which is good. But again, that's money that Best Buy doesn't have to spend, I guess. Let Microsoft train our people, you know?
Well, you know, it's everybody wants focus. You know, they, believe it or not, I think it's because of what Apple did with the Apple Store and controlling their own destiny. So rather than pass the baton and hope that your training is taken, you know, by various salespeople and that they sell your product, they don't sell a competitor's product because they think it's cooler. You can sort of control your own destiny.
Well, better. I guess I didn't read all the way through the article now that I think about it. I mean, this is being staffed by Best Buy employees though, right?
Right.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Well, so really there's no difference as far as controlling your own destiny. It's not like there's Microsoft sales folks in there. Those are Best Buy employees. So
yeah,
it's a little less like that.
Now they might have some, didn't they say for their Samsung Experience stores that they were going to have some Samsung employees on site, or is that just for the initial rollout?
I think it's just the initial, because they did talk about that it would be staffed by trained Best Buy employees.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, it's interesting because, I mean, there would be another opportunity for Best Buy to, you know, basically contract out the sales positions, and it would improve the in-store experience because these people would be expert in the Samsung devices or the expert in the Windows devices, because we always talk about that a single Best Buy blue shirt can't know everything about everything in the store. I mean, that might be an opportunity there, but I digress. Who am I? I don't work for Best Buy.
Well, and through this whole thing, we don't really hear about Geek Squad. I mean, do the Geek Squad agents fit into this, or are they just over at the service desk?
Well, Geek Squad's really kind of already a store within a store, right?
Yeah, I guess it is.
They're sort of their own Genius Bar kind of thing.
But can they be geniuses in all these things, and do there have to be like sub-geniuses in each of these?
Sub-genius. You
know? I mean, it starts to get really complicated. Which genius do I look for here?
Okay. It's like Wile E. Coyote. Genius. Huge genius. And then there's this little Wile E. Coyote next to him. He's the sub-genius.
I know more than you do about Windows.
Yeah, but I know about the MacBook Pro.
Well, we did mention WWDC at the top of the show, guys. So our good friend Julio Ojeda Zapato had a little story about what he loved most about WWDC.
Yeah.
What did you guys love most of it? Well, we should say that Julio was most taken by iWork for iCloud. So basically,
yeah, that wasn't the thing that I thought was the standout.
But, yeah, he was very excited about that because he's such a Google guy. So, yeah.
Well, it's unexpected. I mean, you couldn't have predicted it.
Right.
I mean, you could have, but no one did. So.
Yeah.
What was your significant takeaway from WWDC?
Well,
they had a bunch of crap. Well, I thought you were asking it generally.
Right. Yeah. No, there were several things.
Just going to go around.
Well, I liked iOS 7. I thought OS 10 Mavericks was interesting. You know, the tabbed finder for me is going to be a huge productivity boost. But I think the one thing that just absolutely blew me away was the new Power Mac. I mean, I looked at that thing and just said, oh my God. Now I'm not going to go buy one because I'm just not there anymore.
Oh, come on.
You didn't mean the new Mac Pro.
That's what isn't that what I said?
No, you said Power Mac.
Power Mac.
Oh God, I did, didn't I?
The hell's a Power Mac?
Well, you can buy Power Macs now on eBay. They're pretty cheap.
Yeah, exactly. With the G5 Power PC chip. The new Mac Pro. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
It's like a little garbage can
for your desk. Yeah.
Well, yeah, the Subway garbage can thing looks like a New York Subway can, but that's what I thought was the coolest thing. You know, at the end
but
of
that
the day,
was just that was just a sort of a tease though. They didn't really get into that because that's not even available. When did they say that's going to be available? Not until fall, right?
Not until fall, but iOS 7 won't be available till fall, which means that any new iPhones or iPads or anything won't be until the fall. So it'll probably be September before we see any new devices. And the stock dropped during the keynote. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it only went down, I think, 1.5%, but clearly because people were disappointed, they were waiting for some big announcement. And you know what was interesting? During the All Things D, both Kara Swisher and Walt Mossberg did slam Tim Cook when Tim was going on and on about all the things that they introduced. And I think it was Walt who said, well, you know, in all fairness, those are really just incremental upgrades. And, you know, Tim was doing his humma humma, but, you know, that was really how people felt even about this. is, yeah, iOS 7 is cool, but it's an incremental upgrade. So is OS 10 Mavericks.
Well, with iOS 7, though, it's there's a lot of major features they talked about that for a while, like auto updates and other things.
Other things, yeah. I think
have been in Android for a long time. So this was like catching up and stealing features from WebOS and from Android.
Well, here's the one thing that I keep thinking about. If you remember when Apple licensed, I think they licensed exclusively Liquid Metal. It's a technology So now today the MacBook Pros are carved out of a single piece of aluminum, and you know, they go in with I'm sure you've seen the videos where they go in and they laser cut the stuff and all the openings, so it's one hard body that'll not flex and so on, those screws and all that. Well, Liquid Metal could mold that, and you can mold it into any shape. So I think there's going to be some interesting new design for the next iteration of the iPhone in the fall. You know, all the concepts people have, there's been a couple of curved concepts I've seen. And I think that'll be the big surprise. That'll be the big leapfrog.
I think it'll be a big shape of a big brick with a pencil sticking out of the top. What do you guys think?
I think you're wrong.
and gray. I think it'll be gray.
Tapping in on the Mad Men theme.
Yes, exactly.
Let's go vintage with the phone.
Let's go vintage with the phone. So let's try to get back. What was the big takeaway, Steve? So your big takeaway was
the Mac Pro.
Tim, your big takeaway. What was the thing you were most happy to see or not see, or what was your thoughts?
I thought that the photo organization in iOS was interesting. That's been an area that, you know, that people haven't really done a lot with, and Apple has some innovative thoughts there. I also like the iOS for cars. I thought that was interesting to see that they were going into the auto market, you know, with a more integrated, you know, navigation and Siri experience built inside of cars.
Interesting. Kind of on the heels of this week's big news story about, you know, the research that's been done that says basically hands-free does little or nothing, or maybe even
more dangerous
than hands-on. So,
which is hilarious.
Well, it is. But
it was really funny to watch. I don't know if you saw those pieces on the news, but you know, it's like, you know,
yeah, I did
from the Department of Obvious. It was, you know, distractions lead to more accidents. Well, no shit.
Yeah, but I don't buy that. It's like distractions with one hand on the wheel are a lot worse than distractions with two hands on the wheel. So,
well, I'd like to see some stats on young women putting their mascara on in the car, and guys in their pickups eating cheeseburgers on the go.
Right.
I'd like to see those stats.
Yep.
Or screaming kids. How about that? When you're turning around slapping your kids in the back seat.
You know, when I was doing radio, we had a traffic guy that would always, you know, kind of update us on the weird crap he would see on the highways. And he would always come up. He says, here's a good one for you guys. A guy eating cereal in the car out of a bowl.
You see people reading novels on the freeway sometimes, you know. I mean,
well, my favorite is the two guys in the Google self-driving car. One of the guys shooting a video of a guy next to them. You know, they're doing like 70 on the freeway, and the guy next to him has his Kindle. He's eating a breakfast sandwich, and he has a cup of coffee, and he's steering with his knees. You know, these guys are like, can you believe? You can hear the guy that's shooting the video. He says, "Can you believe? Can you totally believe this? I mean, look at this guy." I thought it was hilarious.
Yeah. Getting back to WWDC though, I thought those MacBook Airs were also kind of cool with a 12-hour battery life.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's a
yeah.
I was going to say that was kind of my biggest takeaway was that was probably the most impressive to me was being able to get more battery life out of the MacBook Air. I think that's great because there's not a lot of room in that thing to get you know, bigger batteries and that.
But so the new processors are very low power.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And the price doesn't really go up, I don't think.
I think it went down like $100.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, that was definitely a highlight. The other highlight for me on iOS is the control center and the apps updating in the background. These are nice, you know, features, I think, that, you know, again, maybe catch up to Android. I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah, we've had that for 2 years.
Yeah. Well, I don't care. I still like them.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's very convenient.
Yep. There were people that were definitely liking those features.
So the the lack of skeuomorphism is, you know, the elimination of that was not a big deal to you guys?
It looks just kind of plain. I mean, I guess that's the point, but I don't know. It just doesn't look as impressive as I expected.
Well, I thought the Z Space, you know, the three-dimensional view, the parallax view that they were calling it.
Yeah.
I thought that was kind of neat.
I guess my major takeaway is all of those icons, they look more amateurish than they look now.
Well, see, that's the thing. I you know, the skeuomorphism thing does, I understand that harkening back to things like, you know, a blotter and the stitching and the corkboard and all of that sort of stuff and the wood pan. I could see eliminating that, but now they're very flat and kind of lifeless. I mean, if they can have a little more dimension, that's all that needs. But now it's very flat.
Yeah, it's almost like Windows Phone.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So
right.
So now they're catching up to Windows.
which is weird. Yeah. But you know, the other thing that you have to remember is they're going to be tweaking this over time too. I mean, this is just the first phase of it, and that's what, you know, a lot of the designers are saying, that, you know, give it time.
Yeah, I mean, let's see where it goes. Really has to do with hearkening to things that you're familiar with. So it's not, it really doesn't have much to do with dimension. At least that's my perception.
They also need to do something with the springboard, because that's looking pretty old as a metaphor as well. And doing something like adding widgets or you know, making it more customizable.
Yeah.
I think that'll go a long way. But of course, then that's, you know, catching up to Android as well.
For me, of course, now being the guy of, you know, paying the most attention probably to the least important thing, the fact that they've changed the name of the OS operating system and moving away from cats because, well, they're running out of cats. Well, bull. There's plenty of cats left. And then,
yeah, that whole cats thing was getting old, though.
But yeah, well, yeah. Maybe so, but at least it was Mavericks? I don't understand.
Yeah, I can't wait till they get to, you know, Napa Valley. Or, that'll be good.
Yeah, it's iOS, OS 10, Compton.
Whoa.
Well, you know, there's a ton of great surfing spots. They you know, they've got a whole wealth of new names. Maybe we'll even have, Stony Point on Lake Superior as a future surf break. I don't think we can hold our breath on that, but
it's not surf though. It's just California.
Just California locations.
It's like locations in California. Yeah.
Okay. So,
Yosemite would be one.
So there's no Banzai pipeline in the future.
Probably not.
No. Of course, you don't surf that anyway, pipeline? Right? In Hawaii, yeah.
Oh, Hawaii. No, this is California.
This is only California.
So they've said that they're focusing on California locations.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. When he introduced it, that's what he said.
As where, where it's made, right. So why not use locations from
Cupertino, where it's maybe the next one for all you.
Which is interesting, because I thought Cupertino would be the first one, but.
So what are they going to do? Northern California locations?
No,
California.
I'm sure they'll do, you know.
So
Josh Petrie will be.
OS 10 Disneyland will be big.
Death Valley might be one.
Trestles would be nice. Classic surf spot in Orange County. I can see Trestles.
Bay Bridge will be the...
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I'm counting on Big Sur to be the next one after this.
Big Sur?
Yep.
Big Sur.
There you go.
Huh. Yep. Or Carmel, one of those.
Yeah. Is that your your prediction?
Yeah, sure. It'll either be that or Napa Valley, one of those.
That's really important.
Yeah, like you can look it up in a couple of years.
Yeah.
I could see definitely the Napa thing happening.
Yeah, at some point.
Yeah, they've got enough that could last them for a while there.
Steve, you weren't excited about the streaming music store?
No.
Oh yeah, that was.
Oh yeah, gone. I forgot about that.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think our friends at Pandora are too excited about it.
No.
So what, you know, when that happened, I rushed right out and subscribed to Spotify. So,
really?
Okay. So yeah. Right. Great.
This is a story that just broke yesterday.
What's
that? It's about Google's Project Loon. So what they're going to do is they're going to float balloons up into the stratosphere.
Yeah.
And then they're carried around the earth by winds, and they can be steered by rising or descending to different altitudes. And then you'll have a special antenna that will be able to receive the internet, send and receive, from the ground. Yeah. When I looked at this, I thought,
because balloons are so stable over time.
Well, you know, if you do the right balloon, you get it up there, into the stratosphere, it's going to, you know, stay put and be blown around. But I just thought, wait a minute now, what about I'm sure they've looked into this dramatically or significantly, but you know, you can't really, unlike a satellite, which you can pinpoint specific geographies.
And it's not impacted by the pressures and winds and
that
sort of thing, yeah.
I mean, what if all the balloons cluster? You know, what if they're all blown into a cluster and then all of a sudden some guy in Africa is like, where the hell is my internet?
Well, this is not necessarily a breaking story. The name, the fact that they're calling it Project Loon is probably more the breaking story, because this was a couple of weeks ago. They were talking about doing this over Africa.
Right.
I thought I read this on the early part of April too.
Could be.
Well, they were talking about it, but they were talking about it as a mesh network, which it is. But that was their big direction with it.
Isn't the name the big breaking piece here?
Yeah, because it sounds like it's something to do with Minnesota for our state
bird. They're going to test it on Monday or on Sunday.
Yeah.
In Christchurch.
Well, the big story part of it is that it's out. It's real.
Yeah.
They're actually going to do it. But of course, you know, like Google Fiber, you know, we might see it, in 2050.
They really should do this over South Sioux City, Nebraska.
Jeez. Really?
I'm sorry. Guys, yesterday, Steve and I got together for lunch. I'm sorry. It was sort of a last minute thing. So we didn't hop on the phone and get you guys riled up, but rounded up. But we were talking about the Internet of Things. And I just noticed this piece that you guys posted for what's holding up the Internet of Things, which I thought was a very interesting piece. We'll be sure to have a link in the show notes. But in a nutshell, Steve, did you post that?
No, somebody else did.
That was Tim then. Tim?
I did.
In a nutshell, what was that article?
We need protocols to make all this stuff work. And I thought it was interesting that, that's exactly what SmartThings is trying to do.
Yeah, we need protocols to make this all work together, not just...
Correct, yeah.
All of these pieces are using different protocols to access different pieces, and they're sort of independent of other groups doing the same thing. And you're right. SmartThings is trying to alleviate that problem with this hub that you get everything.
Except though, I'll sort of jump in that SmartThings is really trying to develop a platform that developers can then write to, and it'll all work with their stuff, you know, with their hub. And what's interesting, and I'll put a link in the show notes to this, Digi International, who's local, had started a company called, or a business unit called iDigi, which they've now rolled into Etherios because they bought a company down in Texas. And they have a platform that really will take any sensor and any protocol and manage it. And so that's one part. And then the other part is there's something called MQTT, which is the OASIS group, which is a bunch of, you know, hardware vendors and people in the space and all of that. They came out with MQTT, which is a messaging protocol for sensors and mobile devices. And so Cisco's already talking about beyond MQTT because they've got a vision of where they want to see it go. So, I mean, this stuff is not all settled, but there's a clear recognition that there needs to be you know, stuff that works. So if you make a Wi-Fi device today, it better talk to 802.11b, g, n, or now ac, or it's just not going to work with all the Wi-Fi hubs out there. And so standards are really necessary, but they are coming to the fore.
Yep. Another one, Steve, that's mentioned in the comments on this article is ThingWorks with an X on the end.
Yep. They've got a platform too.
They've got a lot of this figured out, they say. So I don't know. Are we headed towards one big happy protocol? And you know, is it a race amongst these companies to kind of come up with the one that will become the standard? And, you know,
I think that's definitely the gist of the article is the gist of the thought process is how do you make the Internet of Things truly the Internet of all things? Yeah, because you've got to have that one protocol that allows you to allow things to talk to other things, not your thermostat talks to the electric company. And then instead of your thermostat should talk to your furnace, your thermostat should talk to your refrigerator, your thermostat should talk to, whatever. But, and that right now it doesn't, it has to go through this common point first.
Yeah. Well, and then, to that point is that, all of us want a central control point. So we want a dashboard or we want a phone app or a tablet app or something to be able to control all this stuff. And that's what SmartThings is really positioning. But
what SparkCore is doing too. I mean,
SparkCore devices. You're absolutely right.
SparkCore is the same concept.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And so the smart play for both of them is that they're protocol agnostic. So they don't really care because whatever protocols come out, they can just incorporate the protocol, you know? So it's like, whatever, you know, because they're not going to fight that battle, either one of them. And a lot of these small companies can't possibly fight the battle.
That's right.
And the Oasis Consortium, when you look at the Oasis Consortium, you look at these people in there and you're like, seriously? I mean, is IBM, Cisco and all, are they all going to follow suit? Because I don't think there's enough power there. So I'm not sure where this is all going to end up.
Brian Proffitt, who wrote this article in Read Write Web, was bringing up this point. It's not really an Internet of Things. It's not connected things. It's turning into connected silos of things.
Right. And the implication is it's going to be a long time before this shakes out, you know? So I personally think Internet of Things is going to get my vote for the most overhyped term of 2013 because this is, you know, it's opening up a whole can of worms in these standards. You know, watching standards develop is like, you know, watching paint dry or something. I mean,
it's painful.
Or it's going to be a long time. In the meantime, there's going to be these little silos and pockets of advancements and what Steve was talking about earlier with Digi and ThingWorks and some of these others. But you wonder how the small startups are going to succeed in the midst of all this. But they sure are getting a lot of hype, I'll tell you that.
Well, so then you know who Log Me In is.
Yeah.
Yep. The Log Me In guys. So they have join.me, which is a new screen sharing, webcasting, webinar kind of platform. And so they're buying these different companies, and there are a lot of them that have emerged in Europe because Europe is way, way ahead of the U.S., really the rest of the world over the Internet of Things because, you know, they're more focused on green and recycling and, you know, energy and everything else than we are. But they Log Me In bought a company called Xively, X-I-V-E-L-Y. And so, you know, you have three tiers, right? You have infrastructure as a service, platform as a service, and then software as a service. And so they're not going to play in the infrastructure game. That's going to be Cisco and HP and IBM and others. The platform as a service piece is where it gets interesting because SmartThings is doing both hardware and platform and applications. So they're playing in all three layers. And Xively has sort of said, no, we're just going to be platform as a service. So we're going to be agnostic to all the hubs and sensors and software and protocols and all of that. And I think anybody that's trying to carve out that space is, it's going to be really hard, because it's going to be much easier for people at the infrastructure layer to say, let's go up the stack. So let's build platform as a service. We might not get into applications, but we'll make it easy for people. And I predict Apple's going to jump into the game. I don't think they'll be there until 2014, but it's going to be really, I think it's going to be one of the biggest. It is overhyped already, but it's because everybody's feeling about this the way we felt when the internet went commercial back in 1994, where all of a sudden it was like, oh my God, what if everybody has a network they can connect to? What's going to happen? And that's why all the money flew there and everything else. Same thing's going to happen here, and I'm sure there'll be a bubble. And hopefully I'll be smart enough this time not to participate in the bubble. But
mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway. It's a fascinating area to watch, though, Internet of Things, for sure. You know, I love the term balkanized subnetworks. It's kind of what it is today, you know.
Yeah,
and people tend to forget that. You know, you hear this term, you think it's, oh, it's all this big, wonderful thing that's going to change our lives. But it's early days.
It is. And it's tough to know where do you put your money? You know, who do you bet on?
Yep. Yep.
And I don't think it's clear enough yet.
No, it isn't. I'm sure the VCs are trying to place bets in a lot of spaces, you know, and play the numbers game, but those big infrastructure players are not sitting still either. And
yeah,
you know, and but it's like anything else, the startups are racing to do things before the big behemoths can turn their battleships, you know.
Yep.
So it's a definitely area to watch. IoT
or IOE, Internet of Everything.
Yeah, that's another term, yeah.
Or E-I-E-I-O. Old McDonald? Yes,
that's
there
right.
You go.
That's right.
The Old McDonald's. It's the Internet of Old McDonald's.
Well, speaking of old things, segue.
It's a nice segue.
Speaking of old things, I'm thinking about the movie business in Hollywood and how things happened in the past.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought this was a cool article about George Lucas and Steven Spielberg predicting a massive implosion of Hollywood caused by the tech industry. And I got to tell you that I totally am there.
Yeah. See, I don't agree with it. It strikes me, not unlike ourselves as two older guys being jaded and curmudgeon-y, because they're basically basing this on the fact that the business will stay the same and the business will change. I still think there is a place for movies. There is still a great, whether it's a niche movie or a blockbuster, I think there's still great opportunity there. I still think there's a desire for people to leave the house, to go out, to get away from sitting in front of the screen. I think that there is still a place for younger people, which ultimately become the mainstream audience, to get away from the house and go out and do things with friends or dates or whatever. So, you know, I'm sure that to these guys, the makers of blockbusters, these two are the makers of blockbusters, are probably looking at it this through a bit of a jaded lens.
But well, you know what though I've noticed on my Apple TV, when I go in, look at movies and stuff, there's beginning to be, you know, if you want to see it now, there's very, very few, but there's a select few that you can watch it now, rent it now, but it's like, you know, $25. And then, you know, that after it's released and, you know, it'll be like, you know, $9.95, you can rent it. And so that's happening, but the first release to an Apple or a Netflix or a Amazon or whatever, is that we're coming closer, because if you just look at the cycle between theatrical release, so that's what Spielberg was talking about, right, Tim? In this article, he was talking about, or in the video, he was talking about how, you know, when he did Jaws and Raiders of the Lost Ark, that they were in the theaters for a year.
Yeah.
And I think one of them was over a year. And now you're lucky if you've got 2 to 3 months before they're, you know, on DVD and released to the market. Well, that cycle is shrinking even further to the point where we will get to a point where it's, you know, it's a global release in theaters and digitally. And then what happens?
Well, I think that they're this, you know, the movies that come out in theaters have to be these spectacles. And so that's why you've got these really, really expensive movies that have to make, you know, $1 billion to be successful, yeah. which is crazy. And those tentpole kind of movies are going to be the ones that tend to get made, and all the little movies where they were, you know, they, you know, you could have a movie like Five Easy Pieces that came out in the 70s, right? Or McCabe and Miss Miller, right? It's little movies, little things like that. Those movies right now are going to be on HBO or Showtime or Hulu or Netflix. They're not going to be at the theater. But back in the 70s, that kind of little movie was in the theater for at least a month or two, you know?
Yeah,
I don't know. I still see
they're both sort of lamenting is that little movie, you know, those kind of movies are not going to be in theaters anymore.
But at the same time, I mean, you look at the popularity of film festivals. Sundance, for example, is probably the template that you look at. It's the big successful Sundance. There's Tribeca. There's these film festivals. And then on a smaller scale, even here in Minneapolis, we have the Twin Cities Film Festival and that sort of a thing. I mean, there are these small theaters that continue to do pretty decent business. Now, remember, theaters don't necessarily make money on the films. They're not making money on the admissions. That's not where their bread is buttered. It's the popcorn, the soda, that sort of a thing. So I don't know. I guess I'm less of a defeatist. Maybe I'm hanging on to that romantic past, but I don't believe movies will become $50 to $100 to go to because they're not live. I mean, I'm not going to pay that kind of money to watch something move on a screen. I can wait for Redbox, you know, so where I can pay $1.29 and, you know, life is good. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a hopeless romantic.
Well, I think, you know, from the pure economics of it, which is what this article touched on, as these guys were saying, at an average cost of $300 million, a budget for a blockbuster-type film, you know, the model can't continue from an economic standpoint. And so, yeah, I agree. They're lamenting that, you know, the good old days for them, they can see are coming to an end, you know, making those big budget pictures. But, you know, my son works in the film industry and his wife does too. He's in set design and art direction and that sort of thing. And they're really active in all these low budget films. There are a lot of films that are shot in Minnesota, and many of them you're never going to hear about because they are, you know, just obscure little sort of, you know, art theater kinds of films. And they, you know, they go to the, you know, the Sundances and so forth and try to catch a break. But the budgets on these films are like 1 million to maybe 4 million. I mean, my son, when he gets to work on a $4 million film, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm. You know, he works on some bigger ones like the Coen Brothers films. I mean, you know, there are some major movies that get shot in Minnesota. Yeah. There've been several over the last few years and he's worked on most all of them. But and those are great, but they're very rare, certainly in Minnesota. But there's a whole underground out there of these smaller budget films, and you know, so it's the long tail hitting the film industry, I guess, is what.
Well,
we
I still harken back to if you look at the top 40 radio model, there are the hits, and then there's those things that support the hits that are filling around the hits. Yep. And I still think that that's what, you know, Iron Man, Man of Steel, Star Trek, you know, the last few blockbuster releases here, those are the hits. But then there's also the smaller films that are the, you know, the secondary hits, the things that help, you know, make the film industry what it is. So hopeless romantic. I did find this funny though, as I was looking at the TechCrunch article that we're linking to in the show notes. At least as I'm looking at it now, the first comment from some guy, Bernardo, And his comment was, maybe if half the movies you make weren't thinly disguised vehicles for leftist propaganda, more people would go to see them. I'm thinking, wow, this dude, I'm glad this guy was able to peel himself away from Fox Network to make a comment.
Just, what a
smoke. They got to slip those in when they can, you know.
What a mook.
Well, there's no question that Hollywood has a certain leaning politically, but, you know, well, and people can't, unless you're Clint Eastwood.
Yeah, but you tend to say that about.
Yeah, like Clint Eastwood.
You could say that about any artist. You could say
those
that
are
about
the
most
two.
Artists. You say that about most artists. Artists are tend to be a little bit more liberal in their views because the more liberal views actually help art happen. So, you know, I think that that's.
Yeah, well, Hollywood certainly has their majority.
Hollywood just produces what people will see, guys.
That's right. It's a business.
Well,
it's
we're not going to talk about politics, religion, or Android versus iOS. Oh, wait, we do that business. Latter one. Yeah. Jeez. So where did you find this article, Graham, from Rob Weber from W3I about, it's not W3I.
Native X, sorry,
Rob.
Native X is the new. It popped up on a WSJ tweet stream. And I thought, a Father's Day story about entrepreneurship. What could be better than that? And I click on it and, oh, my God, it's Rob Weber on their Accelerators blog as a guest blogger or guest mentor, as they call it.
Right.
And I thought, what a great story. You know, he's I tip my hat to maybe their new VP of marketing, Diana, has got something to do with getting him out there on the thought leadership circuit.
Well, and I loved it because it's short, it's easy to read, and it absolutely drives the point home. In fact, the funny
But there are no pictures. I'm sorry.
Well, that's
there
all right. No pictures. But what was funny was that I remember sitting in my home office looking out the window, and my daughter was 8, and she was with a girlfriend out there, and they had a lemonade stand. And I looked out, and all of a sudden, she's gone. I was like, what? And I remember running out there and saying to Susie, her friend, where's Biz? Where is she? And she goes, well, nobody was coming, so she started going up and knocking on doors to have people to tell people to come and buy lemonade.
Hollered. Born entrepreneur,
exactly, because you the lesson that she learned is that you don't sit around and wait for people to come to you. And it's funny now because I give her a bunch of crap about this, but she's running the Best Buy mobile. There's two Best Buy mobile stores in Burnsville, and she's the lead at one of them. And I gave her crap because she had tweeted that she was out standing with a sign on County Road 42 trying to get people to stop at the store on a Saturday.
Doing the sign spinning thing?
Yeah,
I love
that. Well, not sign spinning, but she said she was holding it out, you know, because they had some deal or something. I don't know. But the point was is that she refuses to just sit in the store and wait. You know, she's got to take she's the one who's driving social media for them and you know, tweeting all kinds of stuff about, hey, come on in. Then they had the big thing on the iPhones and on the Galaxy, Samsung Galaxy and so on. So his point, I thought, was really great about entrepreneurs in training and he's going to have his kids out there when they're old enough having a lemonade stand. So they kind of get it.
Yep. Yeah. It's, that there is a life not working for someone else and maybe it's a better one to pursue, you know?
I
thought it was wonderful and I just told him so a little earlier.
Yeah. Very nice. Ladies and gentlemen, we got very, very little time, so we need to get to
Steve's security tip of the week.
Okay, right, here's my security tip of the week.
All right.
The young woman that I just described, who used to be 8 years old, is now 25, and a few years ago, when she was in college, she stopped to have dinner with a friend and left her backpack in her car, and it was somewhat hidden in the back seat, but somebody smashed the window and took the backpack with all her books and her MacBook.
Right.
Well, fortunately, she had software on there that allowed us to pinpoint, you know, it starts phoning home and sending photos in its location and doing screenshots, and we were able to get enough information, but she couldn't get any action out of the St. Paul police, so our friend Mike O'Connor connected me up with the mayor of St. Paul, who in turn lit a fire under one of the lieutenants, who in turn called me the next morning on a Saturday. And that afternoon had an administrative subpoena in hand, went over to Minneapolis with the Minneapolis cops, and they got her laptop back.
So Steve, tell me, how would we protect our own computers in this same way?
You would protect it by going to Prey Project, P-R-E-Y, preyproject.com. Put a link in the show notes. And they have free software. You get a free download. Or you can step up if you want to buy the pro version.
Uh-huh.
And it's open source. And you put that on your system. And if it gets stolen, you just go to the website and say it's stolen or it's lost or whatever. And it'll start phoning home. Now, that's great, except if you don't use a password and you have an administrative account, somebody can just go in and change that or delete or completely erase and format the drive. So here's a couple of other tips, especially if you're on the Mac. Tip number one.
Yes, yes.
Use File Vault, which is in your system preferences under security and privacy.
That's use File Vault.
Yes.
Okay.
And the reason is that File Vault encrypts all the contents. And also then make sure that you toggle, if the computer goes to sleep or you close the lid, that when you open it back up, you've got to put in your password to get in. And I know it's a little bit of a pain, but, within a week, this is going to be a no-brainer. And this encrypts the content. So no matter what, if somebody doesn't have your main password, they're not going to get into your machine. Okay, that's thing number one. Tip number two.
If
you really, really want to secure the thing so that no one can even boot from an external drive and reformat the internal drive and erase it, is you can put on a firmware password. And that means that you have to know that password to be able to erase the hard drive or erase the SSD inside. So
number two is...
is
add a firmware password.
And I'll put both of these in the show notes. And that way, even if somebody steals it, they basically got a brick. But here's the kicker.
What's the kicker,
with,
Steve?
With OS X, you end up having a guest account automatically. So if somebody steals it and they, I can't get in the administrative account, and I can't reformat the drive, they're going to probably click on the guest login, which allows you to pull up a browser and so forth. The second they click on the guest login, it starts phoning home and sending photos.
Nice.
And so no matter what, you at least have a chance of getting the cops to get an administrative subpoena, go to the ISP and say, hey, where's this IP address right now? What's the address? And they'll be able to tell you, it's this account and this is where the address is. So
there you go.
You're off and running.
Steve, security tip of the week, pray.com.
Well, that was probably the best one, too. Don't you think?
Well,
I thought it was well done.
It was very practical.
Very practical. Not as nearly as paranoid as stuff that he usually talks about is. But
yeah.
Sounds a little complicated, but
Well, next week we'll talk about carrying concealed firearms and ways to do that. And
we should say that pray.com, preyproject.com will also has the Windows version of the software. So even though he talks a lot about the Mac, it is available in Windows as well. So there you have it. Very nice. What's up and coming, guys? What do we got going on in the tech community for events?
Well, I just learned about an event that I'll have in the show notes, becoming a customer company that Magnet 360 is putting on. And they have our old buddy Jeremiah Aoyang coming from Altimeter Group, formerly a Forrester analyst, and a guy named Peter Coffey with Salesforce, who's some sort of evangelist, and used to be a very well-known tech journalist with eWeek. So that's actually an all-day event that you can sign up for on Eventbrite. And it's going to deal with the sales cloud, the marketing cloud, the whole bit with Salesforce's tools, Lithium and Buddy Media and all those kinds of things that Salesforce now has acquired and is making part of this big marketing and sales cloud initiative. So that should be a good one. It's at the Metropolitan on a Wednesday, July 17th.
Excellent.
What else? We also have WordPress MSP coming up on the 27th.
Yes.
Of June.
Yep. So, of June.
Of June. Of June.
Right. And then July, the Twin Cities Drupal Camp.
Right.
And
Steve will be keynoting the Cybersecurity Summit. No,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
I wish.
Well, maybe he will. Maybe it'll take him a while longer.
Yeah.
And that happens on the 22nd and 23rd into October. So plenty of time to plan for that.
Yep.
And that's at the convention center. And if you're really looking down the line, guys, if you're really looking, you know, into your next year, mark the 20th of March on your calendar.
Mobile March?
Mobile March.
You actually have a date already picked out? I suppose you have to if you got to get facilities and everything else.
We'll once again be at the Earl Brown Center.
Excellent. Good.
Yes.
All right. Well, hey, everyone, thank you for listening to
the Minivade Gang Podcast.
Take care.
See ya.
Yep, have a good one.